ജയം വിശുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ണോ വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ആനന്ദകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പരിധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാ പരിധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമഃശുഭദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമീതി നാമിനെ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്തസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുരുന്മീലിതം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടാം സ്ഥാപിതാം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതി സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സാവധൂതം പരിജനസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാം സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാന്വിതാംശ്ച നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമിനി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യാദേശതാരിണി വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതീ ഇതി നാമിനേ ശ്രീ വർഷഭാനുവേ ദേവി ദൈതായ കൃപാബ്ധയേ കൃഷ്ണ സംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനം ദായിദേ പ്രഭവേ നമഃ മാധുര്യോജ്വല പ്രേമാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിത ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീമൂർത്തയേ ദീനതാരിണി രൂപാനുഗവിരുദ്ധാപസിദ്ധാന്തദ്വന്ദഹാരിണി നമോ ഗൗരകിശോരായ സാക്ഷാദ് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയേ വിപ്രലംബരസാംഭോദേ പാദാംബുജായതേ നമഃ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനീ ഗൗരശക്തിസ്വരൂപായ രൂപനുഗവരായതേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമേ സ്വം നിർദ്ധോഷ്ടാ സജ്ജനപ്രിയാഃ വൈഷ്ണവസർവഭൗമശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായതേ നമഃ വഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധൂഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ നമോ മഹാവദന്യായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രേമപ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യനാമ്നേ ഗൗരദ്വിഷേ നമഃ പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാക്തികം ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ജയതാം സുരലോപാംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമതേർഗതി മത്സർവസ്വമദാം ഭോജോ രാധാ മദനമോഹനവും ദിവ്യവൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദൌ ശ്രീമന്ദ്രത്നാകര സിംഹാസനസ്ഥൌ ശ്രീശന്രാധാശീലഗോവിന്ദദേവൌ പ്രേഷ്ടാളിഭിഃ സേവ്യമാനൌ സ്മരാമി ശ്രീമന്രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീവടതടസ്ഥിതാഃ Karshan Venu Swaneer Gopir Gopinatha Shriyestu Naham Tapta Ganjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sude Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare We were discussing this Shanti Mantram, isn't it? It's called Shanti Mantram, the first one. Invocation prayers is called Shanti Mantram. All Upanishads have Shanti Mantram. Shanti Mantram is that to give us peace, give us peace, give us peace. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Reason is that it is only in the state of Shanti one can understand our pure nature of the soul, what our real identity is. When a person is in Rajogunam and Tamogunam, it is difficult to understand. Sattugunam is the nature of Sattugunam is Shanti, that peace feeling, Shanti inside or peace inside. So that's why I said Purnamadam, Purnamidam, Purnal, Purnamudachyade, Purnasya, Purnam, Adaya, Purnamevava Shishyade, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So Shanti is the nature of the living entity who is in the process of self-realization. So that is what we were discussing last Saturday. So, interesting thing here is that this search for peace, where is this to start with? You will see a lot of interesting, our nature is very much to go looking for something very external, outside, isn't it? Everything is outside for us in this world. And searching, searching, searching in this world, where is Shanti, where is Shanti? And that has been going on from time immemorial, from everybody's case, it's the same thing, that we search for this Shanti outside. So this is where Upanishads are telling us something more interesting about it. If you look carefully, Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there that this Shanti is the very nature of the soul, or it's coming from the soul. Shanti comes from the soul. If you remember, Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu had a very heated argument in the beginning, as you know, in the Bhagavatam. In the seventh canto, if you study, you will see there, Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu had a very heated argument. Hiranyakashipu wanted to find out where this strength is coming from for Prahlada to talk against him in this way and showing such a indifference to the father. And naturally it has upset as a father. Father is very upset. Hiranyakashipu was very upset. And he kept asking, insisting that where are you getting this strength from? Balam me vaikuntha. The answer was, it's coming from the same person. He says, who are you getting? I'm getting the strength from the same person where you are getting the strength from. The source is the same. The source is the same. From the same source, it's coming through Hiranyakashipu, a strength. And the same source, the strength is coming through Prahlada also. So that's why he answered like that. Hiranyakashipu could not understand that. It requires a little bit of reflection on that, that balam me vaikuntha, that balam, that strength has come from Vaikuntha, from Krishna. You have got it also. You got this, all this cruel nature in you. Where did that come from? That's also come from Krishna. And I am so determined to be a devotee, he says. Prahlada says to Hiranyakashipu that there is no other shelter. You cannot do anything about it. You are completely under the control of Krishna. So when he said that, Hiranyakashipu, it did not get into his head still. He could not understand that, what Prahlada was saying. So that's why initially Prahlada says to Hiranyakashipu, Tal sadhu manye suravaidya dehinam sada samudhignadiyam asal grahal hitu atmabhavam grahamandagopam vanam gadoyal harimashrayetaha. He says there that yet sadhu manye asuravaidya dehinam, asuravaidya, best among the demons, in other words. In other words, that's how the asuravaidya means. We should know what asura and sura means. Asura and sura, as I said before, it's not based on the body. That is only the presented in the television serials and all that. Oh, he's an asura, so he looks like a particular way they present it to us, isn't it? All television serials, when they present something, they'll present it in a particular pattern to us, asura nature. But that is not what asura means. Asura is based on a person's nature, asura qualities in a person, isn't it? That's why it is said asura nature is different than a sura or a devata or a divine nature. That is why Krishna spoke that divine and demoniac nature in the Bhagavad Gita. You remember? Practically, Bhagavad Gita finishes at the 15th chapter. The philosophy is all over at 15th. And then Krishna, in order to make Arjuna understand that in which circumstances this knowledge of the self will build up, that was the and in order to explain that 26 qualities were spoken. You remember that? Abhayam, Sattva Samshuddhi, Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti, Danam, Damascha, Yajnascha, Swadhyaya, Tapasa, Arjavam. Isn't it? So, Tadhyaya, Stava, Arjavam. Then, Danam, Damascha, Yajnascha, Swadhyaya, Stava, Arjavam. And then he says there that Ahimsa, yes. Ahimsa, Satyam, Akrodham, Tyaga, Shandi, Apeshunam, Daya, Budeshu, Aloluptam, Mardavam, Hri, Achabalam, Tejas, Kshema, Dridi, Shaujam, Nadroham, Adimanida, Bhavandi, Sambadam, Devim, Abhijadasya, Bharata. So 26 qualities were discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Very carefully Krishna has spoken these 26 qualities. These 26 qualities were spoken only for our benefit, for a person who is engaged in sadhana, so that you can look into yourself and see where you stand in all these 26 qualities. And then after that Krishna spoke so many other qualities of demoniac nature. So there itself Krishna categorized what is one divine nature and there is a demonic nature. Krishna calls it as Devi Sambhati and Asura Sambhati. In fact, nobody is having only Devi Sambhati and nobody has got only Asura Sambhati. Everybody has some quantity of Devi Sambhati and some quantity of Asura Sambhati. That's how we are built. We are in that state because of the modes of nature and our interaction with the modes, it will change. So, Devasura Sambhat Vibhaga Yogam, that is how the chapter is titled. Devasura Sambhat Vibhaga Yogam. So, in English, divine and demonic nature, proper translated. But actually, it says there that how much one is filled with divine qualities and how much one is filled with demonic qualities, in other words. So, it is this quality in a person that determines which way he will go. According to the divine nature, he will act in a particular way. And one who has got a demonic nature, he will act in a particular way. So according to how much is predominant in a person. So sometimes you can see that you may think that somebody is very divine, but they could be a little bit demoniac. And sometimes you will expect find some divine qualities in a demoniac person. It all very much, nothing is permanent in a person. It can change according to the vasanas inside. So Hiranyakashipu also started inquiring, where is your Krishna? He says to Prahlada, isn't it? An interesting thing is, Hiranyakashipu went around looking for Krishna everywhere. Where is this Krishna? Where is this Krishna? He was asking, because Prahlada said he is everywhere. Krishna, Hiranyakashipu says, I'm not seeing him anywhere. This was the answer between the Hiranyakashipu and Prahlada. So eventually, in the Bhagavatam, when Vamanamurti came to see Aditi Devi, that means the demigod's mother, Vamanamurti says that Hiranyakashipu went looking for me everywhere, including Vaikuntham. We know in Bhagavatam that he fell down from Vaikuntham, isn't it? And he had to come to this world as three births, as Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and then Jay and Vijaya had to come down in three different births, isn't it? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, Shishupala and Dandavaktra. Three lifetimes they had to serve here. But what's interesting there is that when he appeared as Hiranyakashipu, he went to Vaikuntha looking for Krishna there, and he couldn't find him there. It's mentioned there in the Bhagavatam. If you look in the 8th canto, Vamanamurti says there that he came looking for me, but he couldn't find me there. I wasn't there when he came, he says. But rather, what Krishna did at that point is, Bhagavatam is saying that he was present within himself. Within Hiranyakashipu, he was there. Krishna took shelter there, he says. And Hiranyakashipu was looking everywhere for outside for him. Instead of that, this story is only to tell us to how to change our thinking of that inward-looking nature essential for self-realization, for realizing the truth. If you constantly inquire outside, you won't find it. Krishna is present inside, and that is where the search must begin. Because his presence is very much inside as a super soul, present in everyone. So similarly, like Hiranyakashipu continued his inquiry, he couldn't find anywhere. We are also inquiring everywhere. Can't find anywhere. So there is this, in Shastram they call it a Dashamanyayam. Dashamanyayam means some 10 people were crossing a river. So they knew there were 10 of them. When they crossed the river, one of them, the leader, started counting and he said, there's only 9, he said. Where is the 10th one? So they kept thinking, and everybody was counting, they say it's only 9, they said. They didn't include themselves. So in a similar way, then somebody else had to come and tell them, look, you're all 10 together. So then only realized they've forgotten to count themselves into the 10. So similarly, we will look for Krishna everywhere except inside, where he is there all the time. In fact, if you start thinking that the temple and deities and holy places and all will stay, they may stay with you for today. But one person who is with you all the time, forever, in this life, life after next, the next life, every time, is inside. He's there. And that is what we have to accept first, that Krishna's presence inside as the super soul. So once we realize that he is so close to us. That's why it is mentioned in the Upanishads that he is closest to all of us. Closer than anybody else, he is so close to us. Isn't it? And that is the vastu. That is what Bhagavatam says as the vastu. Isn't it? That Satyambaram Dhimahi in the Bhagavatam, in the beginning first words, and later on in the end of Bhagavatam also you will see this Satyambaram Dhimahi. And there it says, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam. Vastu, what we are looking for is that inside. Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tavatrayon Mulanam. So Srimal Bhagavadam Dharma Projida Gaidavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam Vedyam. For those who are Nirmatsaranam, free from any kind of impurities, or in other words, one who has got this divine nature in a person, for him, Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadam, he will know that this vastu, what he is looking for, the object what he is looking for, is inside. It's not outside, it's very much inside. Tapatrayo unmulanam, that when he realizes that is his freedom from all the anxieties in life, especially with the three kinds of distress what one experiences in this world. So, this mantram, or this first Shanti mantram, says there that once we know your identity, who you are, what your real identity is, then you will know that the basis, adhishtanam. Adhishtanam means the fundamental thing on which everything has been built up, and that is that soul. That's what it is stressing on. Purnam, and that is Purnam. Purnam means it's complete in itself. It's based on that everything has come out. The material creation has come from that. All the intelligence has come from that. All the false ego has come from that. The mind has come from that. Senses have come from that. But the basis is this adhishtanam, or the soul. Adhishtanam is the soul. And realizing that is Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadam. That is Vastu. When one realizes that the Vastu is important, the basis is important, it's on built on that everything else has been built up. Because we do not look for these things in spiritual life, we make spiritual life as though it's another fun. Sometimes the other day I was reading in BTG one letter somebody has written. Somebody from UK has written that we are coming to the temple just to enjoy, he says. Just to enjoy. So he says, don't tell us to chant all these 16 rounds, follow principles and all that. We have come to enjoy. So those who are in that mood, they will never get there. It will never get there. This enjoyment mentality is a very dangerous thing. You have to become serious about spiritual life. Then something can happen. But constantly this enjoy business, it is only end up in disaster at the end. There will be nothing at the end. You may as well enjoy in so many other places as well. People get this false impression that if you come to temple and enjoy, at least it is spiritual, they think. It doesn't become spiritual like that. It becomes spiritual when the inquiry starts for the truth. Only then it is spiritual. Otherwise, it's not. So, otherwise, it's purely sense gratification, another form. That's what it means. So, adhishtanam, or the basis, is important. And Krishna is saying, in the Upanishad Mantram is saying here, Purnamada Purnamidam Purnan Purnamudachyade Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Avashishyade. Purnam is the main thing, that Purnam, the completeness of the soul, which is very much the based on which rest everything has come about. And that Upanishad Mantram is saying that if this is realized, then you have realized the truth. There's nothing more to realize after that. But to get to that point, we have to go through a lot of education and a lot of reflection and a lot of understanding about that. So saying that, this mantra has come in the Brihadaranya Upanishad also. I mentioned that this is the same Shanti mantra in the beginning for that. And now, just to make you understand that this connection with Ishopanishad and Bhagavatam. Ishopanishad begins with this verse, isn't it? What is the first verse of the Ishopanishad? Ishavasamidam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tektvena bhunchida ma grada kasyasil dhanam. That is the first verse in the Ishopanishad. If you remember, that is the, if you have the book, you can look at it. First mantra, mantra 1. Ishavasamidam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tektvena bhunchida ma grida kasya siddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. This is the direct translation of the verse. Now, it is from this verse the whole Ishopanishad has come. Ishopanishad is the very preliminary principle he mentions here, Ishavasamidam Sarvam. Ishavasamidam Sarvam is a well-known exposition. It's very well-known throughout the Upanishad. So, this first mantram that കംസ് ഇൻ ബൃഹദാരണ്യ ഉപനിഷത്ത് ഓൾസോ ദ സെയിം മന്ത്രം ഈശാവാസ്യമിതം സർവം യത്കിഞ്ചിത് ജഗത്യാം ജഗത് തേന തെക്വേന ബുഞ്ചിത മാഘൃത കസ്യ സിദ്ധനം ദിസ് കംസ് ഇൻ ബൃഹദാരണ്യ ഉപനിഷത്ത് ഓൾസോ ആൻഡ് ബിക്കോസ് ഭാഗവതം ഈസ് എ ഈസ് ഹാസ് ഗോഡ് ഉപനിഷത്സ് ഇൻ ദയർ ഇൻ മെനി മെനി പ്ലേസസ് ഭാഗവതം ഓൾസോ ഹാസ് ഗോഡ് Upanishads in there. Upanishads knowledge, Sukadeva Goswami has brought into Bhagavatam as well. And that you cannot take it away because basically Sukadeva Goswami is an Upanishads man. He is from the Upanishads background, as you know. That is one who has, with a high degree of realization of the truth, and who spoke about Krishna at the same in connection with the Upanishads. That's how Srimad Bhagavatam has come to us. If we look into the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, let's have a look at that. If you look into the 8th canto, in the first chapter itself, Sukadeva Goswami quotes this verse there. Only small change he made in that verse, a very small change. What he did was, our verse in the Ishopanishad is, Ishavasyamidam sarvam. Sukadeva Goswami says, Atmavasyamidam sarvam. Idam vishwam, he says. Look at that. See Sukadeva Goswami's mind, how it's working. The remaining part of it is exactly the same. In the Ishopanishad, it says, Ishavasyamidam sarvam yatkinja jagatyam jagat. Tena tyaktvena bunchida magrida kasya siddhanam. This is the verse in the Ishopanishad. In the Bhagavadam he says, Atma vasyam idam vishwam yat kinchi jagatyam jagat. Tena tyaktvena bunchida magrida kasya siddhanam. Only a small change in the first line. For certain specific reasons he has done that. That you can see when you look into both the verses. So, when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, naturally Sukadeva Goswami had Upanishads in his background, in the mind. Many places it comes out in that way. And this particular verse, which also comes in the Brahadaranyam Upanishad, has appeared in this 8th canto. 8th canto is referred to the Manvantaradhipati. In other words, where we, the Manus, administrators of the universe. That is the 8th canto. After the Prahlada story, all that up to that has happened in the Satyugam. It has happened in the Satyugam. So it was then that, we are talking about Hiranyakshasapya, Hiranyakashipu story, and all the second canto, third canto, Dhrumarad story, and also Kardama Prajapati, Devahuti Devi, their activities, and in the fourth canto, Prithu Maharaj story, Daksha Prajapati story, everything that comes in the fourth canto, Sargam Visargam, then whatever it is to spoken, then Ajamila story in the sixth canto, and then afterwards this incident regarding Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu, with that seventh canto finishes, isn't it? So from 8th canto, the question came up that how to start about Manvantaram. Then so the question came up from the king, Rajavaja, that I have fully heard from your grace about the dynasty of Swayambhuva Manu. But there are also other Manus. I want to hear about their dynasties. Kindly describe them to us. This is how the questions came. You see, up to Swayambhu Manu's case, the history was spoken. That means that finishes at the 7th canto. From the 8th canto, the other Manus who had their history, he wanted to know. Because Manundaradhipati. So that's why they said Ashtamaskandam or 8th canto is referred to as the history of the different Manus. So there, all the Manus were listed, who comes after Swayambhuva Manu. And when they discussed these different Manus, all the Manu story was, all different Manus names were mentioned, who they are, and each Manu's time, who will come as Indra, and who will come as the seven sages, Saptarishis. Saptarishis are the, because every Manu's time had a decision has to be made, who is Indra, and who is the seven sages, Saptarishis, they are called the seven great sages. So in this 8th canto, you will find that there is a list of the seven sages who are responsible for this particular Manu's time. Seven sages' names are mentioned. And in the next Manu, next time, Indra has to change. This Indra has to go. And Mahabali, who has been fighting with Indra, will come back as Indra then. So this thing called, now we consider Mahabali as a demon, isn't it? It's the head of the demons, actually. All this family, his family members are Kamsa, Kumbhakarna, Viprajiti, Kalanemi, they are all the people. And these people has come as demons now. Kalanemi came as Kamsa. So there is a huge war between demigods and the demons. Demigod and the demons. There's a huge battle. And in that battle, eventually, because initially Mahabali took over the control of the heavenly planets. And then he worshipped the, and then Indra had to complain that to Aditi Devi. Aditi Devi mother performed penances, and later on, as you know, Vamanamurti appeared and got back the heavenly planet back to Indra again. So this constant battle between the demons and the demigods are going on. Demons and demigods means what? This 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Devam, Devasura, Devam, Deva, Sambhati and Asura Sambhati. That is what that is. That demigods are referred to who has got Deva Sambhati, and Asuras are those who have got Asura Sambhati. Now, that Sambhati or this Deva quality or divine quality and demonic quality, that can change. This Mahabali is next coming as Indra there. After he surrendered everything to... So this incident is spoken to us to make us understand when everything is surrendered to Krishna, you will naturally acquire the divine quality. That's what happened to Mahabali, isn't it? Mahabali initially was resistant, reluctant to he had full of pride, full of faith in his own ability, and he continued to act in that way. But this same Mahabali, he actually rejected Shukracharya's instruction and surrendered everything to Krishna, and he became the best among the devotees. And therefore, when it comes to Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna will say, among the Brahminical qualified person, Mahabali is the highest, he says. Brahmanyanam balistvam. Among all the Brahmanas, best among the Brahmanas, I am considered Mahabali as me. He says. So imagine how Krishna honors Mahabali. And we think that Mahabali has been with the Asuras and engaged in sinful activities. Yes, it is true. But Mahabali has this aspect also in him. Brahmanyanam balistvam. And he advises all his followers not to fight anymore, because he says there that this winning and losing is all temporary, he says. You have to look for what is permanent, that is self-realization. This is how Mahabali instructs his followers. Because if you start, somebody has won, normally our tendency is, we are all with the demigods, because demigods are always the best. And whereas the demons, we hate them and we... But it is not black and white like that. These things are not so black and white. So that's why it is said like that. So when we start discussing this Hiranyakashipu story, after that, when Upanishad's knowledge comes about like this in the Bhagavatam, ആത്മാവാസ്യമിതം വിശ്വം. ദ ഫസ്റ്റ് തിങ് വാട്ട് സുദേവ് ഗോസ്വാമി വാണ്ട്സ് ടു സേ ഈസ് സി ഈശാവാസ്യമിതം സർവം, ഹി സേസ് ഹിയർ ആത്മാവാസ്യമിതം വിശ്വം. ഓൾ ദി അതർ ത്രീ ലൈൻസ് ആർ സെയിം. വാട്ട് ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് ഡിഫറൻസ്? ദ ഡിഫറൻസ് ഈസ് ദിസ് ദാറ്റ് വി കൃഷ്ണ ഇസ് സേയിങ് ദർ ഇൻ ദിസ് ഉപനിഷത്ത് ഇറ്റ് സേയിങ് ഈശാവാസ്യമിതം സർവം. ഇൻ എവ്രിതിങ് ദർ ഈസ് ഓൺലി ദാറ്റ്സ് ഓൺലി കൃഷ്ണൻ. In everything, Krishna is there. In everybody. Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. In Sarvam means in everything, there is Isha. Krishna is present there. Now, to make it a little bit more clear, in the Bhagavadam, he put it, Atma Vasyam Idam Vishwam. In other words, this Vishwam means this whole creation is nothing but Atma, a soul, which is Krishna. So, Krishna and the soul is non-different. He wanted to tell us that. Atma is same as Krishna. Atma and the soul, Krishna is non different. So in the Ishopanishad it says Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. In the Bhagavadam it says Atma Vasyam Idam Vishwam. See? Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. He calls it as Atma Vasyam Idam Vishwam. Vishwam is only filled with Atma. Atma is the only thing that is present here. Everything else what we perceive through our senses, mind, intelligence, they are secondary things that has come from Atma. But Atma is the prime thing that is present in this creation. And once we touch that Atma and realize that truth, all other things doesn't exist anymore. They exist in the sense that you will see the temporary nature of the rest of the things. Mind, intelligence, material elements, even the creation including, has no reality anymore. Up to that point, we consider everything as very real in this world, isn't it? For us, our body is real. And no matter how many times we are told this body is going to die, we still think, I think somehow I'll manage it. This will never go away from our head, this understanding that I'm going to be here for a long, long time. This is illusion. This is the Maya's power. Akatitakatana patiyasi Maya. Maya's strength is like that. Able to put us into this understanding that knowing very well death is standing right in front of us as a reality, but still able to close our eyes like the rabbit does. Atma vasyam idam vishwam. Atma is the only truth in this whole creation. Everything else is not a reality. But still, we make us believe ourselves that not so bad, it's not so bad, everything is okay, it's going on. And so much faith in the body, in this world, in the society, in the government, in the bank balance, in the so many other things what we have created. So that is why Krishna is saying here that the Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti, if there is knowledge and if a person is situated in knowledge, he wouldn't think like that. It's only ignorant who thinks in this way, as far as Krishna is concerned. Therefore, majority of the people in the world is considered to be ajnani. Ajnani means this ajnanam is strong in all of us, isn't it? So long as one feels security in the body, security in this world, he is an ajnani. As far as Krishna is concerned, he is an ajnani. He is an ignorant person. And it is this society is nothing but a combination of all these ajnanis together. And these ajnanis are deciding what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong, what we should do and what we should not do. That's why blindly following society is the biggest mistake we all make in life. Blindly following the society. Oh, society has set up certain norms. That's only for to keep some peace inside. That's all. There's no other value to it. It's all full of ajnanam. Complete ajnanam it is. And this is where that difference between religion and spiritual life also comes. Religion is for the ajnanis. Spiritual life is for those who are seeking the truth. There's a big difference there. Religion means like this, that I'll go to the temple. I will, up to a certain extent, I'll accept it. More than that, I don't want to know more than that. I like to have a comfortable life in this world. I'll accept certain things from the temple, and I'll do certain things good to others. I'll be a good man in this world. This is all religious people, for the religious mind. In spiritual people means what? Bhakti, jnanam, yogam, and renunciation, self-realization, different ball game altogether. This is Vedantam. Vedantam does not mean only Advaitam. Vishishtadvaitam, Dvaitam, Ajindya Vedavedam, it's all Vedantam. That's all Vedantam. Vedantam covers everything.
But only very few in this world will be situated in that process. Majority will be looking for religion. It's religion that creates a lot of confusion in people's mind. People think that, oh, I'm very religious. Yes, you are religious. Religion is only taking you to that state. That's why it is mentioned. So why we are talking about that? Krishna says here, Atma vasam idam vishwam. So this Srimad Bhagavatam, where it's mentioned Atmavasam idam vishwam, he Vedavyasa Maharshi put it Ishavasam idam sarvam in the Atmavasam idam vishwam, and so that people don't misunderstand. That is why in the Bhagavatam Atmavasam idam vishwam, misunderstanding is like this, that we will misunderstand when you say Ishavasam idam sarvam, that we will think that it is somebody who lives so far away somewhere else, whom we do not even know at the moment, and we will misunderstand the whole thing. Therefore, to get that clarity, he said, Atma vasam idam vishwam. Do you understand what I'm saying? You see, if you say Isha vasam idam sarvam, general tendency that we will think there is one Ishwara who lives so far away from here, we will see him one day, all these misconceptions in our head. One day we are going to see him when we get liberated. Till then we don't know him. And he lives in everything. The Shastra is saying like this. This perception like that is very common in everyone. In that God lives somewhere else, I am living here. And I get to see him one day when I get there. This is a principle on which we are looking forward to that day when we will get there. But we are not even sure whether we want to go there or not. We are people like that here. But Vedavyasa is saying here that in order to get rid of that ignorance in us, he says it's not something somewhere else. Atma vasam idam vishwam. In this creation, only he exists. It's him who is present here in everything. And that is intelligence. Why? You can see when we take birth, who maintained us in the womb of the mother? When we were born, we had no idea who we were. What was going through? Body was growing, centered around us, isn't it? About the soul. We came out. Who gave us the guarantee that we will survive in this world? Father, mother may have looked after you, may not have looked after you. But there is only a limit up to which they can also care for the child, isn't it? But the child survives, grows, and all the six changes that happens to this body happens in a natural way. Natural way in the sense that somebody is organizing it from behind. The soul, which accepts the gross material body, it has to take birth, grows for some time, stays stable and creates byproducts, then start dwindling, decay and death. These six stages, Shad Parinama Bhedam, as is mentioned, that exists for the material body. And that's happening irrespective of what goes on in this world, isn't it? Or everybody. It happens. We all took birth, we all grew up, we got a youth, then we start slowly decaying and old age and then death. This is the process in which the soul has to go through. So, in order that we don't bring some another Ishwara from somewhere else and bring it here, Sudeva Goswami wanted to make it very clear, Atma vasam idam vishwam. That is why that one line was changed. If you say Ishavasam idam sarvam, there is a possibility that people will say that Ishwara is somewhere else he lives and he created this, and because he is created, he is present in everything. This is one that is not wrong in the sense that Krishna lives in Krishna's abode and Krishna created the conflict. But when created, Krishna is present also in everything, that you cannot ignore that. That's why he said, Atma vasam idam vishwam. That's the only difference between the Ishavanishad words and the Bhagavatam words. Isha vasam idam sarvam yat kinjat jagatyam jagat tena tektena bunjida maghrida kasya siddhanam. That is the Ishavanishad words. And the Bhagavatam verse is, Atma vasam idam vishwam yat kinjat jagatyam jagat tena tektena bunjida maghrida kasya siddhanam. So this is the important word. So this particular verse, Ishavasyam idam sarvam, because it's come in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it has come in Isha Upanishad, it comes in Bhagavatam, all the acharyas have discussed this verse a lot. because there is a little bit of difference opinion among the acharyas, but they are not so important, but they are also trying to tell us, because it is very difficult to understand the mind of the sages who have revealed this Upanishad mantra to us. It's very difficult to know that. What all they had in their mind when they compiled this verse, Ishavasyamidam Sarva. That's why it's so popular. Now, the problem here is that all mantra from the Vedas, depending on the time who has explained those mantra, there will be a little bit of explanation to that in their direction in which they have explained it. Vedic mantras are quite complex to understand. It's very, very complex. And to get to know the message, if you want to look, you can see there are books written on Rigveda mantras. Very learned scholars, they try to explain that. Even then, there is a limitation up to which they can go to. Sayanacharya wrote a commentary of his own, and that is famous for all the Vedic hymns. How to be understand that Vedic hymns? Huh? It's very difficult. And various meanings have come from that. And in recent times, Aravindo has tried to explain in his own way, which he gives a completely different understanding what he has. So in that way, Vedic mantra and their explanations are very hard to understand. There are loads and loads of books on that. Explanation of this Vedic hymns. So, at the time when, prior to the appearance of the Acharyas, when I'm talking about Acharya, the recent times, Shankaracharya, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, Acharya Mahaprabhu, they are the recent Acharyas who have come in the last, say, 2000 years. They have appeared in the last 2000 years. 2000 or 2500 years. Prior to that, Jaimini, who is Vedavyasa Maharshi's disciple, he was a very strong exponent of Mimamsa philosophy. Mimamsa. Mimamsa means that Karma Mimamsa, it is called. They gave importance to karma. Karma, sacrifices, Karma Mimamsa, as it is. And it is Karma Mimamsa, all these different sacrifices, what you read in the Bhagavadam, Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam, and Agnishtomam, Adiratram, Vajapayam. There's a number of them in the Karma Mimamsa. Mimamsa state, or the Yagam or sacrifices. Some of them are small, some of them are big, some of them takes a lot of time and energy to perform. And that is all part of Karmakanda section. And Karmakandam predominate the Vedas. Dominates the Vedas. It dominates the Vedas, Karmakandam. So, Jaimini's disciples and Jaimini's followers, they started seeing the Upanishads also, mantras also, as a part of the Karmakandam. In other words, in Karmakandam, every hymn or every mantra when you chant, you are supposed to offer Ahuti into the fire, into the sacrifice, into the fire. Ahuti it's called, or Havisa. It's into the fire. So, their question was, this Ishavasam idam sarvam yat kinchit gatyam jagat tena tektvena munjita magrada kasya siddhanam, that how should we use in their sacrifices, how this mantra should be used in the sacrifices. And they also asked this question, as far as they are concerned, every mantra is only meant for performing yajnam or sacrifices. And they also started raising this issue about using this mantra in that way, performing sacrifices. So it was at that time that Shankaracharya came and said, this mantra does not belong to that group. He said, this mantra doesn't... There's a lot of discussions about all these things, various ways discussions. And he said that Ishavasyamidam sarvam aniyuktaha, he says, that this karmam, this mantram is not meant for using in the Karmakandam. Karmakandam means all these sacrifices. He said it is not meant for that because this mantra is not for doing something. Karmakandam is like this, that you have to do something for everything. And this is how we have also got that habit, isn't it? we also our nature you can see in this world, every one of us, we do something, we want to get something in return. We think that only if we do something, something will come out from that. But spiritual knowledge is not like that, that you don't have to do anything. That's what the advanced spiritual personality says, don't do anything. By doing, you won't get it. It's not by doing you get the soul. Soul is already there. The only question is, not doing is important, because by doing only all this problem has happened. So many lifetimes we have kept doing, and we have ended up like this now. And if you keep on doing more, what will happen? We will extend our life cycle more life again. So to get us out of this doing nature is, Upanishads are telling us that don't do anything. You have done enough now. And to get out of this is very, very difficult for us. And it is problem with Karmagandam also. They were also saying that we have to do something. What should we do with this mantra? The same question they were asking. So it was then that he said that, just like you can see, normally we will also say like this, that people have asked me this question so many times, what's the point in discussing this Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam day in and day out? You have to do something, they say. What am I supposed to answer to this question? So much is confixed on this doing business. So if a person has fallen, you can't do anything about it. You just have to keep saying to them. And if after studying all this Bhagavad Gita, if that's what they have understood, then what are you supposed to do? They keep asking this, oh, you have to be practical, they say. You have to be practical in life. Simply reading all these books, what's the use? You have to be practical. So they'll bring up this kind of idea into your head. And then they'll drag you also with them in the same business, what they are used to. Basically, it is their own weakness inside, because they haven't understood that, they are not even understood that it is by doing that they have got into this situation, day in and day out, this doing business. So that's why. So that's the, and if you tell them, there is bhakti, there is jnanam, there is yogam, there is vairagyam, all these things, this is what's the use of all these things, they'll say to you. So what do you need all that for? What am I supposed to answer to that question? So they say these things are not practical, impractical, they say. Impractical. So similarly, the chanting 16 rounds also becomes another karmam in the same way. I have to do it. I have to do my 16 rounds. So the 16 rounds has also become another karmam in that way. So this is the problem. So because it is like that, our mind is so tuned in that doing business and karmam, sometimes we cannot relate with these verses. Upanishad verses, it's very difficult to relate with it. Why? Because it's so ingrained in us, this thought, that it's by doing only I can get something. If I have to get self-realized, I have to do something about it. What are you doing about it? They'll ask this question, isn't it? All the time. You got all this, what are you going to do about it? They'll ask this. All the time people ask this question, what are you going to do about it? Upanishads are telling us, don't do anything. It's by doing that you got into this situation. So if that, till we get that fixed in our head, that I've done enough in this life, and in fact practically everyone's life ends up in distress at the end. Because whole life he has been doing, and at the end he finds purpose for which he did not happen at the end. Got married, raised a family, got involved in social work, this... Only when one has finished all these things, then you can start spiritual life. Otherwise not. Till you are not ready for it, better to continue with your social life, family life and everything. Till you get complete satisfaction. And one day, that will you will yourself learn from your own experience. One day, that sense will come. That all this so-called social work and social life and everything else is not going to get me to the truth. Truth is something different than all these things. That recognition has to come from inside, not from outside. Outside you can tell them all these things, but people will not accept it. Their faith is in this doing business, so strong in the doing thing. That's why so many times spiritual organizations get dragged into some social activity and social kinds of services to the society, and it goes in a completely different direction. it was started for one purpose, ended up in another thing, somewhere else. So what can you do? So that is why one should study Upanishads. Where Upanishads are coming from? What the sages have got the message for us? They have put certain rules and regulations and law and told, given us a certain pattern of instructions and said that if you want to realize the truth, you have to pull out of all these things first before you can develop that further. Or in other words, before you can come to your senses. So that's why in this verse it says here that everything when you say practical means that you are given immediately a twist in the form of an action. Isn't it? Some action is necessary. So in that sense, they were expecting that some action must follow this mantram, and all mantras are meant for that purpose. This is how they have started interpreting the mantra. Who? These Jaimini's followers. This is not Jaimini was the... Jaimini taught Karmakanda, but after Jaimini's time, this Mimamsa philosophy lived for a very long period of time. Mimamsa was there because Vedic way of life was prevalent at that time. Karmakandam was very famous and many people were followers of Karmakandam. So it is from Karmakandam. Karmakandam finishes, but in Upanishads, it's mostly what is spoken is knowledge. Jnanakandam is the important bit. So Jnanam, to separate from Karmam, became very difficult. And it was at that time, Acharya Swamiji gave this commentary on the Upanishads in a different way. In a different way he brought it out. He started saying this, that Annayanda Kriyarthatvad Anratekam Tadarthanam. The purpose of Vedas itself, he said, that if it is only the purpose is Karmam, then it has no benefit at the end. It is no benefit at the end. Simply to execute karmam if Vedas are meant for. So, So Mimamsakara's opinion that all the Vedic mantras were executing Karmakandam. This is how their conclusion. So, there he said that karmam is never complete. This is the difficulty with karmam. Karmam will never be complete. Because the person who is performing karmam is not complete, first of all. You can give a lot of explanations to karmam. This is the reason why Krishna, we are going a little bit a different route now, because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke about karmam, first six chapters, isn't it? It's all about karmam, centered around karmam. And how to come out of karmam. And then Krishna glorified jnanam in a big way. In the Bhagavad Gita, you will see that the importance of jnanam he mentioned. And after saying that, he said that for a jnani who has reached that stage, his karma will be perfect because he is acting in knowledge. The knowledge is there about karma. But one who has no knowledge about karma, what will he do? He becomes a karmi. In other words, he only engages in karma. So, the point he was making was, in his commentary, Acharya Swamiji says here on the Upanishad commentary, that the karmam is never complete because the person who is performing karmam is not complete. Karmam is not complete. So, on the other hand, he said that the person in knowledge who has realized it, he will understand that karmam goes on. For him, important things is the screen behind it. The screen behind it. So, the exactly like the way, just like cinema is going on a cinema screen. Karmam is going on in this world, but it doesn't affect the adhishtanam, the soul. Soul doesn't get affected by that. These are all in a little deeper level. Bhagavad Gita, if you understand, you will understand this principle. That the in the screen, so many things are going on, isn't it? But the screen never gets affected by that. Similarly, Atma is the screen here. And in that Atma, all these different activities are happening in this world. Living entities taking birth, and these living entities who are born, engaged in karma, and experiencing their results of their karma. eventually they're leaving their gross body, and then they're changing their body, going into another material body. All these cycles of birth and death, all this is happening just like in the cinema happening. These things are going on. But the screen behind is unaffected. Who? The soul. Soul is unaffected by all that. That's why I mentioned before, when you read Bhagavad Gita, you have to recognize this point very clearly. Otherwise, what will happen is, Krishna is saying at one point, na jayate mriyate va kadajal, ayam bhutva bhavido va anabhuya, ajam nityam shashadoyam puranam, na hanyade hanyamane sharire. That verse is referring to the screen. That verse is referring to the screen. Na jayate mriyate. The screen has nothing to do with anything. But the other verse, jatasihi dhruvo martyo dhruvam janma mrdasya tasmada parihari arthe. A few verses later, Krishna is saying that one who was born, he has to die, and one who is dead, he has to take birth again. All that is referring to the movie, what is going on. That is this change of body, change of the consciousness, accepting another material body. All these things is referring to the body. So, the Bhagavad Gita's point is this. If you get to the screen and touch the screen, you have got out of the problem. Till that time, you have to suffer through everything what's going on in this world. Keeping this material body, keeping this mind, keeping your intelligence, you can never become perfect, because none of them are perfect. You will never become perfect. To think that in this material body I'll become perfect, it's not possible. It is not, simply not possible. Simply not possible. So therefore, jnanam, jnani says to us that find out your identity, what you are first, and be situated in that platform of the soul, which is the screen. Which is the screen. So once you, as you say, we touch the screen, you have, because that screen is our real nature, not this material body. So it is difficult for most people to come to that understanding easily. There will be always doubts coming up because we identified with the body so long. The mind, the body, intelligence, false ego, all these things we are experiencing at the moment. But these are called chalanam, chalanam movement. Where is this happening? It is happening in the background and all our activities also. And where is this happening? It is in the background of the screen of soul. Screen called soul. So that screen is our swarupam or our nature, and that screen is never affected by any of these things. Although you have heard all these things before, I have mentioned also many times, I keep repeating this. Why? Because it is only by hearing this again and again, this ignorance will leave us. Otherwise, we'll still think, as soon as we leave the room, we'll start thinking, oh, I have to look after myself, I have to get my, sort out so many things in this world. This thought straight away comes back, isn't it? Get back to our, because that is real for us. We have established that life is real, and this life is for discussion. So therefore, it's very difficult to break away from this. So it has to be constantly spoken. That the screen is important, not the movie. What's going on? And once you have touched the screen, the movie becomes meaningless. And the movie is what we are busy with now, not with the screen. So that's why it says here. So, so the Upanishad mantra, that is only one job they have got. All the Upanishad mantras have got only one job, to show us their screen, not the movie. Upanishad's mantras are spoken only with this intention, to get us to the screen and not to the movie. Movie we have seen enough, isn't it? Nobody needs to explain this movie anymore. Movie is going on still and continue to go. So therefore, Upanishad's commentary was started with like this. Ishavasyam ityadayo mantraha karmasva aviniyuktaha astesham akarmaha sheshasya atmano yadhatmya Yadhatmya Prakashagatvad. That is how he began his commentary. Yadhatmya Prakashagatvad. In other words, Yadhatmya Prakashagatvad means that to show you the reality, to explain that reality behind everything. That was the goal of this mantra first. this Ishopanishad mantram. The purpose was to show you the reality. Yathatmyam cha atmana shuddhatval abhavavidhatval egatval nityatval ashariratval sarvagadatvadi vakshamanam. He says here that yathatyam cha atmanah. Atma, soul, is the only reality. There is nothing real in this world. Everything else is our misunderstanding or false or illusion that is making us feel that something is real in this world. Something is real in this world. Even body is not a real thing. We know body is not a real thing. It has got a temporary life and it is only existing because of the presence of the soul inside. And it is only due to the presence of the soul, the body is functioning. At least that much, even if you have not understood it, we can accept it for the moment. Because of the presence of the soul, we are breathing, we are digesting the food, and evacuation happens in the body. We are able to move, we are able to speak, all the five senses are functioning, all due to the presence of Him inside, presence of the soul inside. So that's what he's saying here. Yathatmyam cha atmanah. Atma's presence you cannot ignore. It is it's only yathartyam in reality in all these things. Why? Shuddhatval, abhavavidhatval, egatval, nityatval, ashariratval, sarvagadatvadi, vakshamanam. He says here. That he says that the soul, very nature of him, if you understand how the soul is present in each one of us and how important role he is playing inside us, if you recognize and realize it, where is the question of seeing this mantra purely on a level of the body? That's the question coming from Ajayari Swamiji's commentary on that. He's asking this question. That soul who is present in all of us, in every living entity, it is his presence that keeps it going, isn't it? If you remember that the Dhruva Maharaj, when he saw Krishna first time, Dhruva Maharaj's prayers were like that, isn't it? That he said to Krishna that due to whose presence all this body is functioning. That and he said like that to Krishna, isn't it? How all the Prananamo Bhagavate Purushaya Tubhyam. That I pray my obeisances to you, he says to Krishna. Not that you have come to me in front of me like this, but by whose presence this whole creation is going on and everyone is able to eat, sleep, or do various things with the hands, legs, breathe, and taste. One is able to see, one is able to hear, one is able to smell, one is able to taste, one is able to touch the five senses. How they are functioning, Prananamo Bhagavate Purushaya Tubhyam. To that Supreme Personality who has come in front of me like that, I pay my obeisances. This is how he spoke to, Dhruva Maharaj spoke to Krishna when he came. He didn't say to Krishna, oh, you look so beautiful with your peacock feather. And that's what we would have done, isn't it? That's, we'll see, he's also like me. The only thing is he's having a peacock feather and he's got some yellow pidambaram and a nice garland. We will see like that, ignorant. But seeing Krishna like the way Dhruva Maharaj has seen, Yonda pravishyamamamacha mimam prasuptam sanjeevayati agila shaktidhara sudhamnaha anyamsha hasta charana shravanam tugadin pranan namo bhagavade purushaya tubhyam. This is how the first verse in Dhruva Maharaj's glorification is like this. He didn't say one word how Krishna, beautiful Krishna looks, or where you got your clothes today from, Harrods or somewhere else, where did you buy it from. This is our that complete ignorant state of spiritual understanding, isn't it? That that's why we develop spiritual life in our own style, according to our nature. Acharyas tells us something different. They tell us something different. They say you should see Krishna in this way, like Dhruva Maharaj has seen. Like Ajari Swami is saying, that He is who is present inside us, by whose presence everything else is happening in this world, He is more important. That's Him. That is His attributes. That is His importance. It is by His presence that everything is happening. That's why He says, Yonda pravishya mama vacha mimam prasuptam. He says, I am a 5-year-old boy. What can I speak? He said. When Krishna touched on his cheek with the conch shell, Vaighari woke up from inside, and that is how he was able to speak like this. Otherwise, you couldn't expect this from a 5-year-old boy, the way he spoke. Mama vajamimam prasuptam sanjeevayadi akhila shaktidhara sudhamnaha. That this whole energy to function this body and able to speak in this way to you, you have given me that power. This is how a devotee recognizes Krishna's presence. Yonda pravishya mama vacha mimam prasuptam. I don't have a capacity to speak. If you are able to speak something, it is Krishna's capacity, Krishna's energy or Krishna's kindness that one is able to speak. It's by Krishna's mercy one is able to speak. Otherwise, we could all be deaf and dumb, isn't it? How come the senses are functioning? Because Krishna is inside, therefore it's functioning. This is how you have to see everything in this life, in this body. Yonda pravishya mama vacha mimam prasuptam. And therefore, all the devotees, they pray to Krishna before they talk about Krishna. That Sukadeva Goswami prayed in the Bhagavatam. You remember? Soilam krishishta bhagavan vacham stime. Before he spoke to Parikshit Maharaj, he says, he glorified Krishna and says, please come and decorate my words, he said. Because otherwise we may talk nonsense about Krishna, not knowing who Krishna is. We will see that in different way, Krishna's position. We will think that he is somebody like us, or we'll start seeing at other things in relationship with Krishna. So to properly understand Krishna, we have to understand it from the great personalities who have understood Krishna, or who had the mercy from Krishna. So they have presented Krishna to us in a particular way. That is what Dhrumaraj did. Sanjeevayadi akhila shaktidhara sodhamnam. That who presents in everyone in the whole creation, and by whose presence alone this creation is going on in this world, is carrying on. And that is the first recognition to him. Anyamscha hasta charana shravana togadin. Hastam is hands, charanam is legs. These hands and legs are functioning only because of your presence. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So, 5 Jnanindriyam, senses of knowledge, and 5 senses of action, Karmindriyam. All are functioning because of Krishna's presence inside. Anyascha hastacharana shravanam togadin. To that Supreme Personality, I pay my obeisances. This is how Dhruva Maharaj paid his respects to Krishna. So, in the same way, here, you will see here, he says here, that the this realization, what has happened was that karma mimamsa is one way going. It talks about karmam, performing karmam. As far as karma mimamsakas are concerned, self-realization is not given the importance. They have said that you execute karmam nicely, the results that you can go to the heavenly planets, enjoy very well, and come back, and then what will you do? And again do karma again and go back to heavenly planets. This way continue that cycle. That is the Mimamsa philosophy. So therefore, whereas when it comes to Vedantam, Vedantam means Advaitam, Dvaitam, Vishishtadvaitam, all that falls in the Vedanta category. So there we have the understanding is that once you know your Swarupam, your personal identity, that Prakashakatvam, or the 4 qualities mentioned here, which is that Shuddhatvam, Abhavaviddhatvam, Egatvam, Nityatvam, Ashariratvam, Sarvagadatvam. All these are reference to the soul. We are not interested in discussing about the body. Body, there is so many other people discussing in this world. Why we have to waste our time discussing the body? Body, there is universities and professors and medical specialists. They let them discuss the body, what the body is doing. But Acharyas are saying is that we only discuss about the soul. We have nothing to discuss about the body. As far as they are concerned, body has come, body will go. Body is not a permanent thing. So what this is, karmasya viniyuktaha tesham akarma sheshasyal atmano yathatmika prakashatvad. Then it says here, karmasya viniyuktanam karmasya viniyuktam. Not for engaging in karmam, all these things were spoken. Upanishads are not spoken for engaging in karmam. On the other hand, achesham akarma sheshastyam atmano yathatmika prakashakatvad. Akarmatvam, to bring akarmatvam into a person. In other words, to free oneself from karma. That is the purpose. So that's where our difficulty is, isn't it? Because we are stuck in the karma, in this mud called karma. And when somebody tells you, come out of it, we'll say, why? Why should I come out? I'm happy here. They are saying, if you are happy, they stay on well, as long as you want. And when you are ready, we can talk about the other things. So this is where that clear line you have to draw between engaging in karmam, engaging in jnanam. Jnanam tells us that karmam is not going to help you. At the end, karmam will only bind you to this world. That's the very nature of the karmam. Karmam is like that. So it says here, karmasya viniyuktaha tesham akarma sheshasyal atmano yadhatmika prakashakatvan. So saying this, he said that the this different nature of the soul is discussed after that. So tesham akarma sheshasya atmanaha yadhatmika prakashakatvan. So yadhatmika prakashakatvan, in other words, prakashakatva means Upanishad's duty is to illuminate you, what you are. It's not asking you to do something. It is only making you aware of your real identity, what you are. What by nature, what's your spiritual nature, to make you aware of that. And Upanishads are concerned that won't happen as long as you are busy with the karma. With the karmam. Because karmam is bondage. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, you will see there, Krishna says at one point, in a place, Prabhupada also mentions there, that the karmam's nature is like that. What is the nature of the karmam? That karmam binds you. Karmam bind you. Karma means karma vasana straight away. Isn't it? As long as you engage in some karmam, there will be karma vasana. And how powerful these vasanas are, very difficult to talk about it. Very difficult to talk about it. Why? Because you have to experience it yourself, how powerful your vasanas are. Only you can find out that. How will you find out? I can tell you how you will find out. Karma vasana goes in and stays there. It stays as a vasana inside. In the dream state, they will appear. These vasanas will appear. 30 years ago, certain things what I did in the working life, it comes back in the dream, even today. 30 years ago, what I did, I was filling certain data sheets, and that filling data sheets has come back to my sleep today. Can you imagine that? How powerful that vasanas are? Karma vasana is like that. You may think that, oh, it's done and gone. No, it doesn't go. Because anywhere, whenever you have done something where you have given a lot of attention to it, and somewhere you had some anxiety about it or some vigaram, emotions have excited inside, that will stay as a vasana there. That is how powerful it is. It will follow you and it will stay there, and suddenly one day in your state, in dream state, you are sleeping and this whole thing comes back. So many things like that. There's only one thing I mentioned like that. Well, so many. I don't have to tell my Puranam to you, but that's not the goal. The purpose of saying this was that is how powerful they are, these vasanas are. It can come. It will come, and especially it will come at the old age. It will come. And that is why I mentioned before that the old age, there is no thing called deep sleep. It's all this dream state going on. Why? This subtle body has grown so big and it is filled with all these vasanas, ready to get out from there. It's looking for an outlet. And the dream state is the perfection for that. Because physically you are not able to fulfill those vasanas anymore. Physically you can't do it. So you can imagine 30, 40 years you have worked somewhere in somebody's some people, and they will have definitely injected certain vasanas in you that you won't be able to free yourself easily. That's why it becomes absolutely essential at the old age to devote as much time as possible to wipe out those vasanas with strong bhakti, strong knowledge and strong renunciation inside. This is why at the old age, it's not for relaxation actually. Old age is for wiping out all that what we have created in this life. we misunderstand that, ah, old enough, I'm retired, I can relax now, everything. People talk all this rubbish, isn't it? They say that, ah, now my family all settled very well. Children I've got grandchildren, they are coming, visiting me at the weekend, I'm going and visiting them. And then, because I've finished all my responsibility. He has finished nothing, none of his responsibility. All he has done, that he has been busy with his family life. And he will use Bhagavad Gita to justify that. This is what happens, most of the people. They'll say, oh, we have to do your responsibilities, and you have to do your duty. They'll say like that. Where on earth Krishna says about a duty like this in the Bhagavad Gita? You can't find it anywhere. None of the acharyas will accept this. Nobody will accept this. People everywhere, especially in India, they say this, that you have to do your duty, they'll say. And they will quote Krishna, and Bhagavad Gita, they will use it for that purpose. Very freely, they'll do that. Isn't it? And that also becomes, and we also induce everyone into karma in this way. We go and tell everybody, oh, you do what you are doing, it's fine for you. And and inject the same mentality into everybody. But what Shastram is saying to us, that karma, if you understand the science of this karma and karma vasana, that it can come back and control you to such levels, depending upon the karma what we have done in life, it will haunt you at the time of death. They will come back so strongly later on. So therefore, Upanishads take this route, that if you know who you are, that you have nothing to do with this karma, nothing to do with this karma vasana, by the strength of that very knowledge itself, you can get out of it, provided that knowledge gets very strong inside. It's all understanding, isn't it? Or realization, as it is called. So, till you get to that stage, our, see, bhakti is for this purpose only. Why bhakti? Bhakti is for this purpose, understanding Krishna and handing over everything to Krishna and surrendering to Him. That is bhakti. Jnanam is that process that is only who Krishna exists. Everything else is false. Realizing this and accepting Krishna as the truth, that is jnanam. This is the only difference between jnanam and bhakti. Bhakti is nothing but accepting that I cannot do anything about it. I have accumulated enough of sinful activities and karma vasanas inside. It is stuffed so strongly inside. I am unable to help my own situation. I offer everything to you. Please take care of me. And surrendering to Krishna completely, that is bhakti. That is bhakti. On the other hand, if you feel that this knowledge of the Upanishads can be taken seriously, and in the strength of that knowledge you can continue your life in this world, fully accepting what the Upanishads are telling us, and constantly reflecting on them and strengthening your understanding in that way, eventually you can free yourself from the influence of this karma vasana. You can get released. Tesham adityavajnanam prakashayati talparam. Krishna says there in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Tesham adityavajnanam. Like a sun, it will come out from inside, this knowledge of the Upanishads. Prakashayati talparam. Prakashakatvam is the nature. It is not bringing anything from outside. The soul inside already has got it with it. What has happened is, due to our so-called karma, all these karma vasanas have accumulated, and that has put this complete blank screen in front of the soul, and we fallen into that trap of the karma vasanas. We are suffering because of that. We have to accept another body, change the body, and all that. But tesham adityavajnanam prakashayati talparam. Krishna is saying that such a person who is intensely searching for that truth, I'll help him to get out of it. I'll help you to get out of it. So, jnanis are also dependent on Krishna. Without Krishna's mercy, nothing is possible. Whether you are a jnani, whether you are a bhakta, doesn't matter. Krishna's help is the main thing. So, either through surrender or through cultivation of knowledge, one has to get there, to this point. So, that's what I was saying before, that in spiritual life, goal is important. If the goal you have not decided yet, what you want from spiritual life, then this will go like this gadi. It will carry on like this, won't have any destination, you see. So that's why goal is stressed in Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, goal is the most important thing. Do you have the goal? You can see observing a person whether he is serious about spiritual life or not. If he is getting distracted to social life, social activities, and various kinds of projects in this world, you can take it, the goal is not clear in him. He's still thinking about having a comfortable life. And if by chance self-realization or liberation happens, let it happen. That's their mood. That's their mood. They're still busy with this world. You see? So that is why it is so important in Bhagavad Gita. This is the reason that 15th chapter finishes Bhagavad Gita. In the 16th chapter, Devasura Sambhad Vibhaga Yogam, Krishna talk about all the divine qualities and the demoniac qualities. While speaking, Krishna says, we will discuss divine qualities in detail, demoniac qualities in a nutshell. Why? Our nature will be, as soon as we hear the demoniac qualities, we will look at others and check who has got, everybody has got this demoniac quality. We'll go after others. And that itself is a demoniac quality, to go and check others, whether he is a demon or not. That itself is demoniac. But what Krishna says there was, that these qualities are divine qualities, but those qualities will naturally come to you if you are serious about the goal. It will naturally come to you. You don't have to Now what's happening is, we have listed these 26 qualities. And we tell everybody else, you see, if you have got this 26 qualities, you're okay. No, you're not okay. You're okay when your goal is clear. If your goal is clear, Krishna is saying, I will give him all these 26 qualities, what he needs for that self-realization. That is how it is to be understood. People misunderstand Bhagavad Gita like this. When you study chapter by chapter like this, this is what happens. The relationship will go. You won't understand. Krishna, in the second chapter, very clearly told us the goal is this, the truth is the soul, nothing else. To that understanding, he emphasized and very, very strongly put it in the second chapter, as you know. In the whole second chapter, he's stressing that point, that nasade vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada, ubhayoravi drishtandam stareyor tattvadarshivi. Tattvadarshivi means those who have realized the truth have concluded already that this alone is the truth. Soul. And not recognizing this, everything else is simply an illusion that has created around us. So to get to that point, if one is fixed, you can 72 verses in the second chapter compared to all other chapters. And so much stress given on this one particular point, Krishna is saying to us, and such a person who is situated with that goal, he is a sthita prajnatvam will happen to him, and all the dvandvadidan, gunadidan, bhakta, yogi, karma yogi, all different titles Krishna is calling that person in different times. But the main underlying principle behind that is that person is fixed on the truth. He wants to realize the self in life, in this very lifetime. For such a person, Krishna says, if he is really fixed up in that, this quality will follow him. Not that you go and find each individual, okay, today is, I'll take the first quality, abhayam. I'll be only, from now on, I'll practice abhayam for 5 weeks or 10 weeks. And next one, Sattva Samshuddhi. Let me do Sattva Samshuddhi for another 5 weeks. This is how it's taught these days. I know how it's being taught. That it will tell people, look, all these qualities are important. You practice them and develop them. It doesn't work like that. You cannot practice it like that. Modes of nature is very strong. When something happens, the whole thing flies straight away. No, that's not the purpose. Krishna has spoken with certain method is there to follow these things. When you follow, first thing Krishna says, this conviction inside, this is what I want in my life. I want to get out of this material cycle of birth and death. I want to realize the truth, and anything what's necessary for that purpose, I'm willing to accept it. And that surrender from the sadhaka's position, from the one who is performing sadhana. So that's why it says here, prakashagatvam. So that is one of the important things. Prakashagatvam means the truth is already there in us. The soul is present in us. The truth is already there. Only thing is to make us aware of it, what the truth is. That is the duty of the Upanishads. Upanishads are only doing that. So Upanishads won't tell you, do this, don't do this. These kind of things you won't find in the Upanishads. So just like sometimes when older people, you'll see very old people, sometimes they'll keep their glasses on the nose like this, and they'll be searching for the glasses. Actually, the mind is somewhere else. That's why it happens. It happens many times. You got the glasses on your own nose and you are searching through the glass for the glass what you have lost. But you are thinking like that. So that's the example given here. So, so what Shruti or Upanishads are doing is that the glass is here itself, right on your nose, it's there, to point it out to us. Similarly, to point out to us, the thing what you are searching for is not outside, is right there inside you, to bring us to that understanding. That is why it is said like that. So, mind, because Shruti, Upanishads have only one thing to tell us, that we are complete, isn't it? Purnam, it is. So the body, mind, intelligence, that all these things is not us. And that is not to be acquired. There is nothing, no shortcoming in us. There's, we are not short of anything in realizing the truth. So the question may come that mind, body, intelligence, they all have imperfections. They all have imperfections. We all have to agree with that, isn't it? Body has imperfection, mind has imperfections. But those imperfections are not your imperfection. It is imperfection of the body, not you. But mistakenly we think that these are all imperfection in me. Bodily identity brings so many problems. When there is an imperfection in the body, we think that we are imperfect. But Upanishads are telling us, you are not imperfect. Same thing with the mind, same thing with the intelligence. All imperfections are on the what is called as upadhi. They are called upadhi. These are all upadhi. Upadhi. We talk, Upanishads talk from the platform of the soul. From the platform of the soul. It is a soul that what we are. Shariram, mind, body, mind, intelligence, ego, all these are upadhis. Upadhis means they come upon it, on the soul. And they will go on its own. This body won't be there after this life. Another body I may get. And there will be another body. After that, another body I may get. My mind will be different depending on the next body what I got. I'll have a different body. Isn't it? Similarly, my level of intelligence will be different. Even if it's a human body, it could be another mind, another body, another intelligence. So all those things will never be perfect. You can never say when it's a perfect state. Never perfect state. Perfect means it will never be permanent and equal all the time. In other words, it is never able to show that it can do everything for which it is meant for. Like buddhi can change, isn't it? Buddhi changes even in this life, in this body itself, buddhi is changing. As a child, you have one intelligence. You grow up, you have different intelligence. At the old age, your intelligence is different again. When we talk about intelligence, we are not talking about solving mathematical equations or anything. That's not what it meant. Intelligence talking about is our nishchayatmiya buddhi, how we make the decisions in this world. That is buddhi, nishchayatmiya buddhi. Sankalpa vikalpa mana nishchayatmiya buddhi. Mind, the way you make a decision in your youth, the way you make a decision in the old age is different. Isn't it? In old age, you can see things a little bit more in perspective. That's the advantage of the old age. In the youth, it's all somebody whips you up, telling you that there is so much to be done in this world, and excite you with some idea. You fall for it straight away. You take the responsibility of changing this world. You feel that the whole world is on the wrong platform. It is my duty to get it right. And start at the age of 22 itself, if some people have come to that conclusion. Very early in life. And they continue for some time. Afterwards, they realize that this nothing can do with this world. World will go its own. I have to go my own way. So that intelligence is different at that time. When you are young, very much ideology, and you are carried away by all the way it was presented, that idealistic nature. But in a advanced age, you see a little bit more realistically things. You can see and understand in a different way. So, buddhi is different. In the youth, it's different. In the old age, it's a different buddhi. Similarly, mind also. Mind which used to get disturbed over little things or which was acting in one way at a particular time in life is different in the old age. At the old age, you don't care what goes on in this world, isn't it? Whatever happens in this world, nothing you can do about it. And you become more realistic about it. So, in other words, the mind, the intelligence, Similarly, many other things also changes according to the change in the body, change in the life in this world. So therefore, Upanishads are saying to us that Prakashakattvam, that Shariram, material body, which was once very healthy, active, and was able to do many things, has changed. And the old age can't do anything, so you limit your actions then. That is the next thing you can do, isn't it? Don't go out too much. Can't do anything anyway. Can't go for a low walk. And somebody tells you, play some football, invite you to play football. And you say, well, you play, I'll watch, she'll say. That's old age, isn't it? You can't play anymore. But in the youth, we never thought like that. So body has changed, and the results of that. Mind has changed, intelligence has changed, everything is changing. So this changing nature is there in the body, mind, intelligence, everything. Therefore, upadhi, these are called upadhi. Upadhi is a word. Upadhi is always imperfect. Body is always imperfect. They will never be perfect. What is perfect in all situations and what is complete in all situations is only the soul. Only the soul, nothing else. And that's why Upanishads are busy discussing about the soul, not discussing about the body. There's nothing to discuss about the body so much. As far as all the great jnanis are concerned, that body is existing, and some of them even deny this existence of this very body. They say, that is such a temporary thing, why should I take it so seriously? Whatever happens, one great jnani said, that he said, all my life I fixed on this truth that I am the soul. And all I want to do that convey this message to others and eventually want to leave the body in some forest where some animals can use it if they want it, if they want to eat this body. I don't see any other utility from this material body. This was his very conclusions at the end. What else this body can do? What is the use of having it? I mean, at the end, it's only going to give you trouble. It's not going to give you any happiness at the end. Isn't it? So such an extent that renunciation knowledge, when it develops in a person, you can expect that kind of conclusions also. So whatever problems are happening to the mind or to the body or to the intelligence, that's not your problem. Again, the same thing. As long as you are identifying with the body, you are start thinking, oh, I got this problem, I got that problem. But Krishna is teaching us on every day this principle. As soon as you go into the deep sleep state, what happens? Where is all your problems then? The whole day you are busy with some problem, isn't it? You are very absorbed in the solving the problem. But somehow or the other, that experience of the soul is in the sushupti state. In the deep sleep, when you go to that state, there is no problem. The problem didn't exist. So from there you can understand that this problem I was concerned about is, strictly speaking, not belongs to me. It's a problem related to the, because of my identification with the body, the mind, intelligence and ego, I have got this problem. Otherwise this problem doesn't exist for me. It's only for the false ego that all these problems have come about. This is how we have to understand, because the purpose of this sushupti state itself is this, that to make us aware every single day that as soon as you go to sushupti, you are free from all these problems. So, in the deep sleep state, what exists? That is what you are. See? When you come to the deep sleep state, what is existing at that time, that is your identity. That once you know that identity, you will know that that identity or that identification as the soul is not responsible for your karma. Karma has not come from him. Karma has come from the body, mind, karma vasanas inside. That's where karma has come from. But we strongly identify with karma, isn't it? We strongly identify with karma. I have done this, I have done that, I have to do this, I have to do that. And I got my plan for the rest of the life. I'll retire at 50 and then I'll be enjoying, I'll be doing this, I'll do that. So many things we concoct within our own mind. But the soul is witnessing with all our stupid statements coming from our mouth. or from our mind, whatever that's coming out. The soul is observing. The soul has nothing to do. Soul is no retirement. Only body has the retirement. But what I'm saying this is, it is so strongly identified with the body that everything what we make, this statement is all coming from deep ignorance. From deep ignorance. So, once we understand, realize the self, once we realize the self, you will know that I am not the doer and I am not the enjoyer either. Kartrutvam, Bhoktrutvam will leave it, person, when he realizes the self. So, doership, enjoyership does not even exist in our pure identity of the soul. With pure identity as the soul, there is no doership and no enjoyership either. I am not doing anything, I am not enjoying anything in that state. That's it. That is why, if you look into Bhagavad Gita, you will see, I mentioned this so many times before, Krishna talks about a state what is known as Shandi, isn't it? Shandi. We look into the 12th chapter, after talking about a devotee, 12th chapter is all about Bhakti Yogam, isn't it? Bhakti Yogam, after talking about a devotee, he says there that the devotee's quality, he says there 20 verses in that chapter, in the chapter, and at if you look into verse 12 in the chapter 12, Krishna is saying here, Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasal, jnanal dhyanam visheshade, dhyanal karma phalatyagam, tyagal shandi anandaram. You see, when a devotee has reached a state, we are talking about devotees, Krishna is referring to is different. Krishna is not referring to the devotee who is busy with various other things in this world. Krishna is talking about one who is in the path of self-realization. That's the devotee Krishna is referring to. Krishna says here, Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasal jnanal dhyanam vishishyade dhyanal karma phalatyagam. We will discuss that when we discuss 12th chapter. But for the moment, if you take that, ultimately Krishna says, Tyagal shandi anandaram. Shandi. Krishna gives a lot of importance to this thing called shandi. Why shandi is important? Because only in shandi, all this understanding of Upanishads will happen. When there is no shandi, nothing will go in. You'll try to understand with the mind and intelligence, and it will not work. You know, because till you experience all these things, it has no meaning, isn't it? There's no meaning. That's why Krishna says there, Tyaga shandi anandaram. Shandi is the goal. That is in the 12th chapter. If you go into the 2nd chapter, again, Krishna is... Bhagavad Gita is a very mystery in that way. It's spoken in such a way that unless you are in tune with what Krishna is saying there, and without the understanding that, able to connect with to 2nd chapter, I think it is the number is... 66, is it? The second chapter, 15 and 60. Yeah. Yeah. We discussed this verse. I don't know whether you'll remember. Nasti buddhir ayuktasya naja yuktasya bhavana naja bhavayadam shantir Ashandasya kuta sukham. Krishna is asking, you know, have you seen sometimes Krishna is sitting on the chariot with Arjuna and they'll put a poster and underneath that yada yada hi dharmasya glanirbha, they'll put a verse like this. But of all the verses in the Bhagavad Gita, it is this verse which is the best caption. Why? Krishna is asking us a question. He's asking us this question. What is he saying? He says, Nasti buddhir ayuktasya na jayuktasya bhavana na ja bhavayada shandir ashandasya kuta sukham. One who is not transcendental consciousness can have neither a controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace. Then Krishna is asking this question, how can there be any happiness without peace? How can there be any happiness without peace, isn't it? So you can see, there are so many other places also in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about Shanti. So Shanti is the nature of our soul. When the soul is sent, Shanti comes from the soul. That means when self-realization happens, Shanti comes. When self-realization happens, Shanti comes. And that is the symptom of a realized soul. One who is always agitated, busy with millions of things in this world, there is no Shanti inside. You couldn't say that he has gone very far in spiritual life. If you have a lot of karma vasanas inside, you have to burn it out somehow. And then you keep on doing karma, that's fine. But you can't say that he has reached the state what Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita. Shandasya kuta sukham, he says. He's asking us, where is the question of happiness for him? He says, when there is no Shanti inside. So, actually, Krishna says here that without all these things, in the Sushupti state, you don't see any imperfections in you. Do you? You don't see any imperfections in the deep sleep. These imperfections, what you think you have got, for which you are working whole day and night, is all in the wakened state and the dream state. Not even in the dream state, mostly in the wakened state. So, because we identified with the vacant state so strongly, and you feel all these imperfections, you have engaged in karma. That's where karma has begun. Karma has nothing to do with the Sushupti state. It has no effect at all. So, but Sushupti state, you recognize this one thing, that without the mind, without the body, you experience some happiness which has come from the soul, and that is Shanti. That is Shanti. That Shanti, what you have experienced in the deep sleep, has come from the soul. It didn't come from the body. Whereas all the happiness, what you experience in the vacant state, has come from the mind, come from the body. Come from the mind and come from the body. Materially, you had some success. Immediately, mind feels very blissful, happy. And bodily also, you feel very happy about it. Isn't it? Or some bodily comforts you had, a good feast or a good entertainment or a good journey or a good holiday. That didn't come from the soul. That all came from the senses and the mind. Senses and the mind. Now devotees are saying that we'll have a spiritual holiday. Because identifying the comforts of the body through the senses and identifying that as a spiritual life. You don't need any spiritual holiday. If you accept this truth, what traditions are telling us, you can be happy right here without going anywhere, without doing anything. It is possible. That is why Upanishads are pointing out to us this one fact, that imperfection is all there in the body, mind, intelligence, ego, everywhere. There is imperfections, but not in you. In the soul, there is no imperfection. So that's why Upanishads have only one duty, to establish us on the platform of the soul, Prakashagattvam. And that is what it is mentioned as Prakashagattvam. Prakashagattvam means to show you what you are actually, reveal your proper identity to you, rather than identifying with the false things in this understanding. Like sometimes we think that as devotees, we have to look after our body. We say like this, isn't it? And then go for a massage every year to some of the best resorts in the world, wherever you can go. For that, I need money. Somebody has to give me that money for that trip. And because I'm a devotee, I have to look after my body. It is Krishna's. There it is, Krishna's abode. But otherwise, it's not. So this shows the whole emptiness of the argument. It won't stand in front of the Upanishads, all these arguments. This you can say in a layman's language. You can say like that. So, in deep sleep, you don't experience any of these things. So, why it is spoken like that? That the yathartyam cha atmanah, that when you know the reality as that you are the soul, or pure knowledge of the soul, when that happens, that is vakshyamanam. So that is what he is going to say here, that in our nature is such, no impurity can touch it, the soul. No impurity can touch the soul. We have to be very clear about all these things, because otherwise people think, what is soul? We understand soul. Everybody says, soul, I know, I'm spirit soul, I'm Brahmasmi, we say. I'm Brahma. What does it mean? Simply saying Aham Brahmasmi is no good. Or quoting that verse, Dehi Nosmin Yada Dehi, to others. And that is not good enough. You have to know what you are, isn't it? So, say, Upanishads are saying to us that the pure nature is that soul has no impurities. It's always pure. Pure means no impurity can touch that, and there is no impurity to be removed from the soul. No impurity to be removed from the soul. As far as material body is concerned, you can never make it pure. Isn't it? With the best effort, you know this body is never clean. Isn't it? Anyone will agree with that. The things inside, we don't want to discuss that, inside this body. But externally, you can do a lot of things to clean this body up. But no matter how well you clean this body, it's not, you can say that it's 100% clean. It's never clean. So, imperfection is in the body. On the other hand, with the soul, it's always clean. No impurity can touch the soul. This is the difference between the soul and the body. Soul is always pure. No impurity can touch the soul. Whereas body is always unclean. And all impurities inside the body. You can bathe 3 times a day. You know, no matter how many times you bathe, or the best cleaning materials you use, still at the end, only thing is, if you clean it with the soap and some things like that, at least it won't smell badly. That's all how much you can do with this body. There's nothing more than that, isn't it? It doesn't do anything more than that. What can you do with this body? So that is the reality of this body. But when you fall into this ajnanam, ignorance, first thing what you do is try to make this body perfect. How to keep this body going? How to keep it in a first-class condition? And how I can engage in Krishna service? And all these logics will bring for that, for the body. That's not knowledge, that's ignorance. Knowledge is to accept this reality. Body, no matter how hard you try, it's imperfect, it's impure. And no point in trying to purify it. That means you are trying to fight something which you will not win at the end. So that's the main thing. So, absolute purity is impossible with the body. First of all, this conception of purity, impurity itself is wrong. Conception of purity, impurity is impure. The concept itself is impure. For example, things called, let's understand this. We talk about infection. We talk about virus, bacteria and all that kind of things, isn't it? But if you observe the nature very carefully, you can understand that these things have only very limited meaning when we talk about all these kind of things, virus, infection, bacteria and all that. Because this bacteria and all other things also are manifestation of the soul. Also manifestation of the soul. And that is a relative thing. It's a very relative thing. In us, it manifests in one way. In the bacteria, it manifests in another way. For example, let me talk about this. At one time, bottled water was not there. Bottled water is a new thing, particularly in India. Now everybody carries one bottle with them when they travel in the train. Especially if they are Western devotees, they'll be so worried if I don't have the bottled water. Yeah. But prior to that, if you think about this, we were drinking water from the well. It was not even boiled water. We drank the water from the well. We didn't get sick. Well, many people, there was no bottled water. Practically, it didn't exist. And everyone drank the water from the well. And boiling and all started after this advancement of the science. Science has come and told us that if you boil it, you won't get sick. It is because of the water that you're getting the sick, and this, so many scientific theories have come about, isn't it? So anyway, it has started like that. So because of this, people have taken the water from the well where we drank the water before. They have tested in the laboratory and said, oh, you shouldn't drink this water. So all these years we're drinking that water, nothing has happened. What is the logic in that? So anyway, So analytically, if you think in that way, you can see there so many things are affecting us. Now look at this way. Though there is water in the drainage, isn't it? And these hogs, they drink that water. They are not getting sick. Why? We are getting sick. We drink the water, we are getting sick. They drink the water, they don't get the sick. So all these things called infection, virus, bacteria, these are all relative things. They are not on an absolute level, there is no meaning to it, all that. From our experience in this world, we have understood that if we drink this water, maybe we may escape from the trouble. But if you don't get infection from water, you go to hospital, you'll get infection from there. Or you'll get infection from somewhere else. Say even in a group of people like this, somebody has got some infection, you can catch it. You can get it. But so if you are meant to get it, you'll get it. It's going to come. What I'm saying is that this thing, we are making it as an absolute thing. So relatively, on a relative platform, all this purity, impurity, all these kinds of things exist. Krishna also says the same thing in Ekadasha Skandam later. Krishna puts it in a different way. Krishna says, gunam dosham. Good and bad, we differentiate like that. Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, both are bad. To find good and bad in this world itself is bad, he says. That's how he puts it. We are very particular about, this is good, this is bad, isn't it? We differentiate like that. Krishna says to Uddhava, to see things in this world, good and bad itself is bad, he says. To see it like that itself is bad. Why? Because you have brought this Bhedam there. Why? Bhedam means the difference. The soul is the only truth in this whole thing. Everything else is a relative things that's passing through in this world. To give importance to that, Krishna says no. So, just to go back to that example, that the sewer food and the sewer water the hog drinks, eats, and he becomes strong and stout. If you look some of them, you will see that they are maintained very well. The hogs in Vrindavanam, you can see that. Many of them wandering around all over. They have got children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. The whole family will be moving together. They live a much better family life than us in that sense. Isn't it? If you look at them carefully, yeah, they are not getting sick. They are all very healthy. And the food is from the sewer. Yeah, and the water is also from the sewer. They are not getting sick. They are healthy. And when you look at them, it appears as though it looks like a man who has been taking Chyavanaprasham continuously. You know, when you take Chyavanaprash, that lehyam, you get very fat and strong in that sense. So it will give you an impression that they have Chyavanaprasham from the sewer. So this is the thing, that we consider that these things are bad, these things are good. It is bad for you, it's good for that the hog. Hog is relation, that is this. He is created like that, that he gets all his strength for what he wants to do, everything from the sewer. How would you justify that? He is able to live in this world exactly like the way we live. Only thing, he doesn't have the houses, televisions and all that. But he has his own life living. He is happy in his own state, what he is doing. And he is able to maintain his life and he doesn't have any problems. He lives like that, isn't it? So, so what is poisonous to us, it has become tonic for him. The sewer water, which is poison for us, it's become tonic for. So similarly, you can give many examples like that. Sometimes the, say, a rabbit or a rat, it gets killed on the road. And when you look at it, you feel an uneasiness, isn't it? Dead body lying there. And it's so disgusting. Whole body is crushed and all inside has come out, blood and everything. It looks so disgusting that. And you avoid that. A few crows will come and they have a big feast that day. What they have got? Jivo, jivasya, jivanam. Krishna has given the feast for the crow that day. He's having a great time. He doesn't get sick. He is happy that he has got his food today for that. So, that is his food. So, for one person, it is impure. For another person, it's not impure. For us, it's impure, that thing. But for the crow, it's not impure. So, all these things, good, bad, everything in relationship with the body is all relative. It's all relative. So, that's why once it's spoken, that this is a Jnani's words, that you are distinguishing all this water and everything on this understanding. This is good, this is bad. He said, when you start seeing that this water from the Ganga river and the water from the drainage on the same level, if you can see it, then you have understood the truth. In other words, we give importance from a devotee's point of view, we see Ganga is pure. But Ganga's purity is not based on the water quality or the performance of analysis in the laboratory. That is what we have to understand. Ganga's purity is because Shiva Shivobhul, Bhagavadam says like that, that when Krishna's lotus feet was washed by Brahma, at the time from Karanarnava Jalam, that means the water from the Karanarnava ocean, broke the shell of the universe and came to this planet and famous Ganga river. And that is the important. That is what more important than analyzing Ganga water with the water in the sewer and thinking that Ganga water is purer than that. That is misunderstanding. Ganga water, if you go, sometimes it's not that pure. Sometimes people say you don't get sick after when drinking water. That is also true. That Ganga's purity is not based on the water quality. It is rather based on because touched by Krishna's lotus feet. That is why that Ganga river is auspicious. So everything is on a relative plane. All these things are on a relative plane. So, in strictly speaking, once we know our identity as the soul, so it says here, you will realize it, there is no thing called impurity. See, for today, on the bodily, when you have bodily concept of life, you are considering this pure, this impure. Isn't it? But once you have realized the truth, you have become, the self-realization has happened, then there is no such thing pure and impure. That's why it is said here, Shuddhatvad. Shuddhatvad means that. Shuddhatvad is Shuddham, is pure. Because your Swarupam has changed, isn't it? When you are, so sometimes we say that, he is a Brahmana, he is very pure. Or he is, and somebody else is, he is just a meat eater. Or he is a Mlecha, or he is a Yavana, or something like that. These are all relative things. This has nothing to do with the soul. Once you come to the platform of the soul, and you have realized the truth, what we are, this Brahmana, this Yavana, this Mlecha, this Shudra, all these things goes. It has no standing anymore after that. While in the bodily concept of life, all these things you take into consideration. Nothing more. After that, it's finished. Varnashrama dharmam also is like that. It has no support anymore after that. So, the point what Upanishads are saying to us is this, that this nityatvad, ashariratvad, that this thing on the platform of the soul is eternal. That is our real identity. We are eternal. It's just not words alone that now I'm saying to everybody I'm eternal and then thinking, I'm going to die tomorrow. That's not eternity, is it? If you are saying that you are eternal, you should mean what you are saying. Otherwise, what does it mean? Is this theory for somebody practically? Then you will say, practically it's not possible, they'll say. So then what is the use then of studying all these theories then? If it is like that, then what is the use of studying Ishopanishad? If practically it's not possible? No, Ishopanishad is telling us that the nityatvad, you are really eternal. You are eternal, but because in your fallen state, in the conditioned state, due to identification with the body, you are feeling you are temporary. So that is why this clear definition of the nature of the soul, nityatvad, ashuddhatvad, avigaritvad, ashariratvad, all this is given to the soul straight away. So ishavasyamidam sarvam is coming from there, this understanding. In other words, what the verse is telling us is, cover the whole creation with the soul. Cover the whole creation with the soul. Put this cover of soul on everything. Don't keep looking at the body and absorb in that analysis of the body. And that's what the world is, isn't it? The whole world does this business of seeing everything through the body. So, In order to stress that point, it's mentioned here Shuddhatvad. Shuddhatvad means there is no ashuddhi, no impurity in the soul. Soul is pure. Soul is pure. There is no ashuddhi. That's why it is a Shuddhatvad. What else? Abhava Viddhatvad. That is another interesting thing. Abhava Viddhatvad means sometimes people will say, oh, I have done so many sinful things in my life. I don't know how I'm going to suffer for that tomorrow. Somebody is going to send me. And they will always ask this question, especially after the sixth canto. Will Yamadudas come and take me to Yama? This is a very prominent question from many devotees. They will ask this question. That who goes to Yama? Then you have to tell them that, oh, you won't go. You are all right. You have chanted the holy name. So you're covered. So they want to hear that because there is a fear inside. They don't know what all they have done, even in this life. And now they're all wandering around in the Kantimala and Tilak and everything. But what all has happened in the previous life, who knows what has happened before, what all we have done. So that's another story. But this question will come that I have committed, sometimes devotee will say, I committed a lot of sinful things in my life. What will be the reaction? They want to know what the sinful reaction. And especially if you read that fifth canto, the hellish planets, that it is spoken in elaborately, a description of the hellish planets. And you start, it will come to your night in the dreams. And once it start coming, then no sleep in the night. So all these problems are there. So that is why there itself Upanishads are telling us, apapa viddhatvad. Papam or sinful reactions is not for the soul. Soul has nothing to do with any of these things. Soul is completely free from the effects of papam, sinful life. Where do we suffer then? These different sinful activities, you can see, what actually happens is, with sinful activity, our bodily identity gets stronger. And with the result is that, when the bodily identity gets worse, you have to suffer through the body. If not in this body, in another body. And that suffering is also through the body and the mind. Even at that time, the soul is not involved. The soul is not involved in any of your businesses, whether you are doing good to somebody, whether you are doing bad to somebody, soul is completely a witness to everything. It's completely independent from everything. We identify with the body and think that, oh, I have to suffer all these things, I have to go through so much misery, and we worry. So you don't have to actually, strictly speaking, you should not have any worry about the fifth canto when you read fifth canto, provided you stick to this understanding of the soul. If you are fixed up on the platform of the soul, if you are living on the understanding of the soul, no sinful activity can touch the body. That's why it's saying. So, ashariratvad. This is a very important principle in the Vedanta philosophy. Ashariratvad. Ashariratvad means I am eternal, I am pure, I am always liberated, and I have no problems anymore because I have no material body. Material body is not mine. This concept, and to confirm within ourselves, material body is not mine, I have nothing to do with this material body, is called ashariratvad. So now the question will come, if it is like that, I can go and do what I like. This is the straight away the people's mind will go in that direction. I am the soul, why should I bother? I am soul, body is doing it, I am not doing it. So I can drink, I can eat meat, I can do whatever nonsense I want to do because I am transcendental, I have nothing to do with that. Is not that, you have to understand also why it is like that. When the answer to that question is, when we say you will not be affected by the sinful reactions from your sinful activities, this is important. When you, after performing a sinful activity, when the sinful reaction comes, when the sinful reactions comes, still if you are able to say, I am not this body, then you can do it. Do you understand what I am saying? That today, you have understood theoretically that I am not this body, soul is not affected by any of my activities. soul has nothing to do with the sinful activities have nothing to do with me. On the strength of this statement, if you go and commit sinful activities, and when the reaction is coming, you should be still able to handle it with the understanding, I am not this body, then you can do it. But that's not possible. That's the problem. When the misery comes, then you start thinking, why did I do all these things? Then you cannot say that Bhagavad Gita is wrong. Bhagavad Gita is not wrong. That is why when Krishna was talking to Uddhava also, dehastobi na dehastha, that you have come out of, first you have to get out of this bodily identity. Only after that you can do anything. Then nothing will happen. But the fact is, once you got out of the bodily identity, your mind will go in that direction, rather it will go in the direction of the soul. That's the difference. So long as you are in the bodily identity, you have to follow all the rules of this world, all the rules of the Shastra. You can't stay away from that. That is the understanding. That is the explanation to that. So, the point is, Krishna says here, Ishavanishad is saying, we have to know these words very well. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kinja. These verses are not just ordinary verses. The sages have given so much understanding from that, to draw out from that, we require this support from the commentaries, from the acharyas. It says there that only from this understanding, that soul is the one which keeps this whole thing. It is soul that is present in everything. Only due to the presence of the soul, everything is going on in this way. But having understood that, we are that soul, not different from that. That is our true identity. After realizing that, talks about the nature of the soul. Nityatvad, Shuddhatvad, Abhava Vidyatvad, Ashariratvad, all these qualities of the soul. Nityatva means eternal it is. He has no time he was born, no time he is going to finish. Bhagavad Gita says that, isn't it? So there is no such thing called death for the soul. Nityatvad. Shuddhatvad, always he is pure. Unlike the body, you don't have to clean the soul with the soap and the and the brush. You don't have to clean the soul. Soul is clean all the time. Shuddhatvad. Whereas the body, no matter how much you clean, purify, it will still remain as the unclean thing. Shuddhatvad. Nityatvad, Shuddhatvad. Abhava Vidyatvad. Abhava Vidyatvad means that you may commit sinful activities in this world, but the reactions don't touch the soul. Reactions don't touch the soul. That does not give us any freedom or license to do anything we want. Simply because if you have reached that state, that you are on the platform of the soul, then even if you do anything wrong, the reactions won't have any effect on you. Why? Because you already escaped from the bodily identity. Only when you are in the bodily concept of life, all these sufferings, misery of this material world exist. For the mind and the body, not for the soul. Whether there is an earthquake, whether there is a change in temperature, or weather conditions, or war, soul is not affected by any of those things. It's the body and the mind that is getting affected by that, isn't it? So that is how we have to understand these things. Otherwise, we will say, I am such a sinner, I have no hope in this life, Prabhu. Next life, I don't know what will happen. We'll be mourning like this all day and night. And that doesn't stand in the front of the Upanishad's knowledge. Upanishads are saying to us, Nityatvad, Shuddhatvad, Abhava Vidyatvad, and then he says here, and so therefore, this will only happen when our attention falls on the soul, isn't it? Self-realization happens when our attention falls on the soul. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. So it's a stage when, if your attention is on the soul, then the chances of any sinful reactions touching you is not there. It's not going to happen to you. So therefore, you know this thing called Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means those who are liberated while living in this body. Those who are liberated while living in this body. Many of them are, and any great sages are in that state. They live still, but they are not in that body anymore. They are liberated already, but they are still waiting for the body to drop. Body to drop. That is that state what is spoken about. So, in their attention, those who have come out of this bodily identity as far as they are concerned, their body doesn't exist anymore. You see, when you are seeing one person who is a realized personality, he has realized the truth, he does not identify with his body anymore, but we identify him with his body. That is where the problem comes. So sometimes you will see some realized souls, they also go through all the problems of the body. Just like at the time of death, the body has to go, isn't it? So there will some disease will come at that time to take the body away. The body has to deteriorate and decay and death has to happen. So some disease will come. And we will say, oh, the poor man, whole life he is chanting holy name and look at his condition now. He's suffering like this. This is what we will say about him. Why did this happen to him? In other words, we want to establish that he has wasted his time, whole life. This is our mentality, I'm saying. The people think like that. All Mahatmas, we talk about them like this. And all the Mahatmas go through very hard time at the time of death, when they leave their body. There'll be some illness will come, and they'll be sick for a few weeks, few months, and the body will perish eventually and die. And the disciples are standing around and saying, what has happened to my Guru Maharaj? Why is he suffering like this? He was so advanced devotee and he has done so much for Krishna. Why is he suffering like this? The disciples are talking to each other. And they'll go running around all over to get the best doctor, best physician and everything to treat my... Can you get my spiritual master better? Somehow or the other. Can you do something about it? Please do something. The disciples are discussing. So that disciple who is thinking his guru is dying, he has not understood anything. He hasn't understood anything about spiritual life. If it is a guru who is going to die, he is not a guru. That is the principle in the principle of the guru. Guru Tattvam is like that. If it is that body is the guru, and if you start thinking that body is the guru, then you have misunderstood the whole principle of the guru itself. That guru is not guru. Guru is not something who dies. Guru is a principle. Krishna comes in the form in that way. But that form is not the important thing. What Krishna has brought you, the message is more important. So that is why it is said like this, that the that you can ask that question, is there a state like that, that you are living in the body where you are not identifying with the body? Yes, there is. That's what is in the Bhagavatam we discussed. Dehastobi na dehastha. He is in the body, but he does not belong to that body anymore. Adehastobina dehastha. Others, they have left the body, but they want to come back to this body again. This is most of the people. That is the reason, as I mentioned before also, I think, that you burn the body as soon as the person leaves the body, for this reason only. Because the soul, when it leaves the body, it has a tendency to come back to the original body again. So therefore, what they do, they, in the olden days, as soon as the person says, they don't wait for anybody to come. Nowadays, when somebody is dead, they'll say, oh, his son is in Vancouver, he has to come, the flight is not there, it'll take a few days to come here. Or somebody is in Sydney, it'll take 3 days to get here. So we'll keep the body for him to see. What's the point in looking at this body? Person has gone long ago. He's not there anymore. But this is our ignorant society tells us all these things. Ignorant society. That's why, and this is a society we are very seriously following. Society tells us that this is the reality. So that's why it is said that the shariram, material body, once it is finished, the purpose is over, the liberated soul simply looks at it as a different object. Dehastobi na dehastha. Although he is inside that body, he is not in that body anymore. Adehastobi na dehastha. Another person who has left that body, who is in the bodily concept of life, who is thinking, I am this body, I am this body, I am this body, he has left that body, but he is thinking, I am this body, so he wants to come back to this body again. This verse is there in the Bhagavatam. It's a famous verse. Dehastobina dehastha, adehastobina dehastha. So Krishna is saying to Uddhava, Uddhava, it is like this, that this body, so long as you identify with, you are in trouble. Till you escape from that, you have no hope either. So first warning Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, anyone who comes to spiritual life is to accept this reality of the soul. There is no point in harping about the body and keeping the body for Krishna's service for the next few 10 years, 20 years and all that. That all is secondary. Primary thing is material body, you can never make it perfect. Material body, no matter how much you try, it has its own way. It will go in that direction. You have no control over it. All the realized souls have only one thing to tell us, that don't waste all your time in looking after this body. Because that is ignorance. That is avidya. Mula vidya. It is that. Mula vidya means fundamental ignorance in us. Fundamental ignorance it is called. Fundamental. Why? Because it is from that ignorance all our activities throughout the day is centered around. Isn't it? So, their point is that if the body is there, use it. As long as it's in a healthy state, it is in a useful state, utilize it for whatever purpose it's worthwhile. It can't help anything more than that. And when it goes, don't lament about it. Don't lament about it because it's not worthwhile possessing it either. That is the principle behind it. So, that is why Krishna says all this in the Bhagavad Gita also. Repeatedly he says this, isn't it? That the material body will go one day. Tatha dehandara praptir dhiratatrana muhyati. This is not muhyati. There is nothing to lament about. Because that is the very nature of the body. What's the point in worrying about something which is meant to be destroyed one day? What's the point in worrying about it? That's the point Krishna is stressing there. So, to give you an example, that people will ask this question, is there a state like that in the body? That you can be liberated and stay within the body? Yes, there is. How do you understand the example? These things are very relative things, isn't it? Very relative things. For example, I gave you this example before also, that the stars which are so far away from here, say, millions of light years away from here, that star, its life is over. But the light from that star takes such a long time to come to this planet. So, depending on where you are, you will see that star in a different way. Say, somebody who is very close to that star, as far as he is concerned, that star is finished. But for us who are here in this planet, and we are still receiving the light from that star, for us the star still exists. Isn't it? For us, that star still exists. Why? Because from our vision, it hasn't disappeared yet. But from someone who lives close to that star is finished, disappeared. So it's a completely relative thing. Similarly, this material body, for one who is self-realized, it doesn't exist for him anymore. But one who is in the bodily concept of life, still identifying with the body, for him, it exists still. Even when he dies out, he's still thinking that this body still exists. I have to look after the body. At least the life is gone, but still he thinks the body. He arranges all the cremation and all other things as nicely as possible with the best the coffin. And arranges so nicely. So he feels some satisfaction. I looked after him very well. I've done everything what I've been told. In this way, this is all avidya. Completely avidya only. That's why jnanis and the realized souls, they speak to us from a different level. Dehastobina dehasta. They are not in the body anymore. They're gone beyond the body. So that is self-realization. And that is what Upanishads are talking about. If you keep on absorbed in the body, bodily needs and bodily comforts and discuss all the time centered around the body, that understanding will increase in our mind also. That is why what is always necessary to discuss what Krishna discusses in the Bhagavad Gita, that is the soul, not about the body. Other things, discussion of the body is only, and also another thing is, you will always see people asking this question, how are you? And you have to answer, I'm fine. What's fine? And then they'll inquire about your health as far as the body is concerned. How much are you suffering from this body? And then there'll be, you start this and then the other person will start his problems with his body. So it all things centered around the body. And Upanishads and the Acharya's message to us is don't discuss the body. Don't discuss the body. It's nothing you will gain from that, discussing about this body. And whereas that's the only thing we discuss, isn't it? We never discuss about anything else. Only the body, we have the most important thing to discuss in this world. So this is where, as I started this today, that religion and spiritual life are two different things. Religion is all these things, this body. And in other words, I'll go to the temple, I will give a donation to the temple, I'll do things, few things. If they tell me to chant, I'll chant for a round or whatever it is. But it remains in that level. Simultaneously, I want to have my life comfortable. I must be happy. My family should be happy. My social life should also be reasonably good. And my pension should come in time, on time, every day. And my life goes smoothly in this world. Plus, I'll add to that a little bit of religion. That's religious life. Vedantam is not for them. Vedantam is for who have understood all this is all useless at the end. I was come to realize that there is something more to it than this. Something about realizing the truth. For them, bhakti, jnanam, yogam, karmam, all this is discussed. So I'll continue next. I think it's quarter to, so I'll just chant for 10 minutes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare.
Prabhupada.